to ask a question already, I think.
I'll do my very best to answer.
Well, yeah. You don't have to answer. But
I'll attempt to. It's only...
It's a question. Anyway, first Joel and then Steve.
Okay.
Joel.
Can you hear me?
I can indeed. Yeah, great. Yes. I can indeed.
Right. I'm probably going to get criticised for what I'm going to say,
don't worry.
I think this talk should have... I think you should have told us how long the talk was going to be.
Fair enough. I accept that.
Because of the length of it, it's a talk that should have been in two parts.
Once again, I take your point there. Yeah, I'll take that on board.
I mean, I think that's...
No, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, because I was thinking, how the hell do I trim this down?
Yeah. I'll
be honest with you. You know, and no, I accept that. You know, I'll take it on the chin. That's a fair dues. That's a fair comment.
I think that's our fault as a party. I mean, we should have found out how long it was going to be as well. Yeah.
No, it's the responsibility is mine as well, as I said. But I accept that as comradely criticism.
Yeah,
I'm going to take it on board.
Hold on a second. Can we discuss the content of the thing, not the form? Have you got a question about Sorrel, Joel?
I haven't, to be honest.
Okay, let's move on to Steve. Have you got a question?
Hiya, thanks. Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
I can indeed. Thank you, Steve. Thank
Hiya,
you.
Joe. I'd like a bit of clarification, actually, about what Sorrel's position was. I mean, this idea that you mentioned about the creation of myth and such like, and this myth of the general strike. I'm just wondering, is he of the position that workers are too stupid to understand their own economic interests as we require this sort of, and it seems like what sounds like an input from outside.
It's interesting, because Sorrel described himself as, a disinterested, having no sax to drive, servant of the proletariat. Basically, he saw himself as a servant of the proletariat. He's putting his ideas out. But what he was attacking basically was the parliamentary socialists. He believed that, if you like, that the syndicalists were capable of doing it for themselves. If you like, I suppose he was acting as a conduit for the syndicalists. But he also believed as well that people were not rational as such; they wouldn't be moved by rationalism. At the end of the day, it's emotion. It's a bit like this. Though, how can I put it? The philosopher Hume said that reason is the slave of the passions. I suppose you could say Sorrel's taking a similar view.
Thank you. It sounds like it to me as well. It sounds like something like Adam Smith wrote as well before, at the same time as Hume, that we workers can't, we're not rational. Well, I'm afraid.
I think he's saying that human beings in general are not rational, you know. But as I said, he's a peculiar thinker. Is there a soul? It's a bit like Frankenstein's monster. It took a life of its own. Became very much, as I said, invoked by people like... It became associated with fascism, rightly or wrongly. But people should remember as well that the original fascists were made up of people who were anarchists, anarcho-syndicalists, and Marxists.
Part of the working class. Exactly. I'm sorry, I don't want to dominate this meeting, but just one thing.
No problem at all.
One thing that strikes me, along with this idea that we cannot be rational about our own interests, is this other idea that there's some sort of revolutionary mission for the proletariat. Mm. And this is the utter nonsense of these servants of the working class, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But thank you. I think it's a question of
situating them in time and space, as I said. It was right in a particular time, the French Third Republic. But ideas, as you know, can get a life of their own, like a Frankenstein monster. It's a bit like what Marx said. I'm a Marxist. This is upsetting myself for Marxists. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
Okay, next person who's got a hand up is Darren.
Hi, Darren.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for the talk. Just a brief question. Well, first of all, I'll be honest with you. My knowledge of Sorrel is near non-existent. He was just a name to me, and I just kind of like when I saw the talk advertised in the Standard, it kind of like it kind of reminded me. I mean, I think my first encounter with Sorrell was that I believe Pluto Press in the God, I'm showing my age now. I think it was in the '90s.
I know you mean.
Yeah, they published a series of books, which were kind of like anarchists and anarchist inspired. And I remember Kropotkin was one of the books, and I think Sorrell's was it Reflections and Violence was books. I can picture the front cover
as well. Yes.
Yeah, so that's like my only kind of like awareness of Sorrell. But obviously, you know, in preparation for the talk, I just was just curious about his background and see if we as a party had written about him. There's like an article from the in the Socialist Standard from the 1970s on the general strike, which was written by a long-standing writer in the Standard called Gilbert McClatchy, gone where he mentioned Sorrell, but there's very little. But my curiosity, my question, because obviously you didn't touch upon it, was that I was looking at his biographical details, and they mentioned that towards the end of his life, the last 4 or 5 years, because I think he died when he was at 22, he expressed sympathy towards Lenin and the Bolsheviks and the Russian. Yeah. And I'm just curious, just because obviously you couldn't touch upon the talk, what it was he saw in the Russian Revolution and the Bolsheviks and Lenin specifically, was the support of where he was coming from philosophically, you know, because, you know, I don't, because obviously you probably are aware of our tradition, so you know what our position is in the Russian. So I'm not, I'm not asking you that just so we can immediately dismiss him. I'm just curious. I'm curious in light of what you said about like myth, the role of myth in revolution, et cetera, the role of kind of like emotion, et cetera, how that kind of ties in with what happened in October 1917 and why it was, because now that I think about it, I mean, maybe he was just a very old man, but obviously Mussolini.
Yeah.
Mussolini was what, 1921 when he first, was it the first March on Rome, maybe? So
at that time,
So I'm curious, maybe did he first, why was it he was receptive to the Bolsheviks? And secondly, was he public enough, sorry, my dog's attacking me right now. Did he comment on Mussolini? Because as you've mentioned,
he did. It was quite, I think initially, about Mussolini.
Okay, what about the Bolsheviks?
It's not so much the ideology as the action.
Okay,
it was a man of action. They actually acted in a virile manner. Yeah,
but okay. If that's the case, but you could say the social revolutionaries acted.
Yeah, as I said,
you know what I mean. They just happened to lose.
I can only conjecture because Lenin did not, return the comment. He described Sol as being a muddlehead.
Okay,
basically, you know.
I think that sounds a good description of him. Anyway, Tim, did I see your hand up? No. Oh. Okay. Had you finished?
Hi, sorry. Somebody ran us just at the moment I was about to speak. Apologies. I was listening to it quite intently. Not something I've ever come across in terms of theoretical perspective, etc. What struck me was some of older members might have actually met him. But I think that I was thinking about the kind of bollocks, if you'd pardon me French, that Harold Walsby was coming up with, and ideological commentary and all of this kind of idea. And did, you know, when you start thinking about myths and, you know, Freud and all of the Oedipus complex and all of that, that was very current at the time, the whole idea of
myths
and
awareness coming through. Yeah,
and absolutely. Then, you know, the links there to Jung and architects, you know, and I suppose need to put that in the historical context.
Yes.
You know, there was a big boom, if you like, in that kind of idea of Greek mythology and the impact of Greek mythology and how that affects kind of us, which you know, to my mind appears to be a complete and utter red herring. But I was just wondering if there was any kind of known links between any thoughts that Sorrell might have had about Freud, or I mean, Jung was probably a little bit later.
Honestly, I don't, perhaps I know, they might be. As I said, I mean, Sorrell was in contact with quite a number of leading things of the age, people like Bernadette Crochet, Durkheim, Le Bon, as well, you know. You know, as I said, he was a bit of an autodidact. I mean, originally, till the age of 50, he was an engineer.
Right.
He's only in his 50s. He started to, you know, to, if you like, he was as an autodidact, you know, self-made intellectual. But yeah, he was fortunate. But
the bits of Nietzsche and stuff coming in there as well, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, Nietzsche had an effect on Freud, the idea of the dynamic unconscious. But I said, I find him an interesting thinker. I don't exactly, you know, because what he does is he emphasizes the unconscious, the irrational. And unfortunately, the irrational does have an impact on the political world. Look at Trump at the moment. You know, and I think in some respects, Sorrell was onto something. Yeah. That people are motivated by myths. If you think about disinformation.
Well, you can
conspiracy theories.
Trumpy as well. Trumpyism, couldn't you?
Yeah. So I can see a kind of a resonance there.
Yeah.
I'm very not defending,
thanks,
you know.
Thanks, Joe. I enjoyed it.
But it's something it's always intrigued me. I came across him via, you know, my interest in syndicalism. I heard the name quoted, you know, and I tried to, you know, have it a bit more. I'm also interested in Anna Arendt as well as a writer. Right. I came across Anna Arendt when she did that piece of reportage about the Eichmann trial, you know, Adam, you know, Eichmann in Jerusalem, when she spoke about the banality of evil.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, he's one of those thinkers who's difficult to actually categorise.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Thanks, Joe. I enjoyed it.
No, I mean, thanks for listening. As I said, I didn't mean to bore the crap out of people. It was unintentional.
Okay, and Andy, it's your turn to ask a question, mister.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. That was it was very thorough, I have to say. Most of these Friday night meetings we have, the speaker doesn't speak quite so in quite so much depth. So. I actually found it very, very interesting. I must admit, I found it a bit hard to follow at certain points. But one thing that it's no criticism.
No, it's okay. I need criticism. Yep, I need to.
Yeah, it's not the criticism.
It's just the
format. I think. The format.
It's a dissertation, and it was. You know, be honest with you, I didn't have much time to trim it down. You know, well, I mean, ideally, I should have. Maybe as somebody said, I should have. Segmented it, didn't it, over several sessions.
Hey, man.
It'd be more digestible.
Float your boat. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
But it's nice to be able to discuss.
Can I just ask, because we've never spoken before.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember. But no. Are you a member of the...
I am a member of the party, yeah. Not an active member, to be honest with you. I mean, I'll explain the last... Well, as I said, I mean, I retired in 2021. Up until then, I was basically doing full-time trade union work. I was a social worker before then. Then after then, my mother had dementia. I was a carer. So it's only the last year or so I've started to get my head together, to be honest with you.
Right.
I was busy. I'm more of a paper member than an active member.
Oh, well, that's great now to know that you're on board, you're doing stuff. But I will get told off because this is what I do. I ramble around a bit sometimes, but I hope you'll get my drift.
Okay.
One of the things that I was really very interested in, actually, as part of your talk, was that when I was at my very former polytechnic type of university, I did sociology, and Sorrell's name came up.
Yeah,
I read a few sort of extracts from books, and I did quite well. I ended up with the first class degree. But if you live in Wolverhampton, that puts you on the fast track to success, you know. But the other thing about it was that I noticed as well was that, to the best of my knowledge, was that Sorrell. Sort of lived in what I would sort of think of as the era after Marx wrote Capital.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and then his the person that you mentioned, who I also know very little about, but I would like to know more about, Hannah Arendt.
Yeah,
She lived in the sort of the generation after.
She's about She's the part of the Weimar generation, that diaspora of Jewish intellectuals, along with people, shall we say, like Marcuse, immigrant to America.
Now, I always associated Arendt with the left, actually.
It's difficult. Once again,
she's difficult. To pigeonhole.
I would say, she's got a bit of a tin ear when it comes to race. She didn't understand, you know, the what they call it, the Black Power people, the Black Panthers.
Right. I've got a subtle reason for asking you this.
Yeah, she's got a bit of a tinier contribution.
You obviously have you really have got some good knowledge on this. But I do have a very subtle reason. And I wrote, made notes about Marcuse and so on. So really, my main points, really, I suppose, two points I would like to make on this is about Arendt.
Yes.
And now, I know nothing about her. I've read nothing on Arendt, okay? Yeah. However, this sort of current trend in, capitalist politics, the capitalist politicians, this culture war stuff, right?
Yes.
Some of the people that I once knew when I was a young man have drifted away to the right wing, libertarian right.
Yes, yes.
And they have taken Arendt from the left and situated her on the right as a culture war warrior.
Yeah.
I've not read a word that this woman has written, but I wonder why that is.
As I said, she has a tin ear as far as race was concerned. She doesn't really understand the black perspective, in America. Yeah? Or I can put it. She had a bit of a blind spot there.
That's really very interesting because before I met the Socialist Party of Great Britain, as some of my comrades know, I flirted around on the fringes of the very hard Trotskyist left, never joining any of them, sussing them out and never daring to join them because they were horrible. Yeah. And this isn't the SWP. This is the people who thought the SWP were not left-wing enough.
Is this the what they call it, Jerry Healy's lot by any chance?
Frank Faraday and...
Oh, yes, I know what you mean, RCP. We've now become, Spike Magazine.
Yeah. Yes, but others as well. There was the David Yaffe as well. Howard went to school with him. Mm. So these are awful people. David Yaffe's not so bad, actually, in person. But Frank Faraday's a horrible piece of work, So, I just found that interesting. Hannah Arendt was cited by Boris Johnson's chief advisor, Muneera Murphy, who I actually knew in person quite well when I was young.
Yes. I think how could I put it? Any thinker can be taken, cherry-picked and weaponized. If you how can I put it, quote out of context, it's easy to do.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it. Yeah.
Thank you for the time. Yeah.
There are a couple of other people I haven't spoken to want to speak. Dougie and then Howard.
Okay.
It's interesting what you say about general strike and myth and things and the working class, you've got the capitalist class and the working class. That seems to be the way we see things. But, to some extent, you get myths developing among the working class, especially you can see it in America, where the sort of blue-collar workers actually support Trump, who's a billionaire, who doesn't really have their interests at heart, but he thinks workers think he does, really,
Kind of false consciousness.
It's a false consciousness, So I don't know. I know there are some groups on the left that argue for general strikes and things and try to get workers to apply for 50 quid an hour wages or something like that, which is impossible, And I don't know. I'm just rambling a bit, really, But I just think, this idea that workers are all in one group. I think it's more complicated than that because you get some quite rich workers.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I think he was right in a particular time and place, as I said. You talking about the Third Republic France.
Oh.
Originally. But I said ideas do, if you like, get wings. Yeah, they become transplanted, if you like.
Okay, well, I'll let somebody else ask a question.
Okay.
rambling a bit. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Tom.
Howard.
Hello, Joe. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Howard. Hello.
Thanks very much for that. Sort of small point, really, but
fire away, please.
Relevant to to the party's view of the world and of what revolution means, what socialist revolution means. You made this distinction, or rather, I think it was Sorel who made this distinction. Force and violence.
Yes, it's Sorel.
And it's an interesting one because you know, we are sometimes characterised as a pacifist party. We're not actually.
Yeah, indeed.
I mean, you know, we say peacefully if possible. I mean, that's the way, that's our view of
absolutely,
becoming revolution. But I mean, that might not be a bad way to characterise ourselves. I mean, it's not good if we say peacefully if possible, violently if necessary, because it's a funny word, violence. But force isn't bad because, look, the fact of the matter is that, you know, once the majority of people want socialism, we should be able to have it. If we can't have it because some people are standing against us violently, then we've sort of got to resist. But much better for us, I think, to describe that as force rather than violence. Yeah. And so in that respect, you know, well, the distinction that Sorel makes is a pretty useful one. I'm not sure if much else. I mean, I knew very little about Sorel before your talk, but I'm not from your talk. I'm not sure of much else of what he said is you know, it can be said to be in line with the socialist view of the world, at least the world as we see it. Anyway, I mean, interesting in itself, yes, but you know, the fact that it provided a kind of inspiration for people like Mussolini's got to be sort of fairly significant as well.
As I said before, though, ideas, once they actually go out in the world, they can be appropriate reworked. Yeah. It's like the word woke. Originally, it meant to be awakened.
Then it's
twisted.
Everyone's
ideological opponents. I mean, I'm not advocating on behalf of Sorrel, but I think some of those thinkers, it's worth exploring. You have to accept him. The fact is, you know, it became a material force in the world, you know, regardless of what he felt. You know, and I think some of these people are more sinned against than sinning. That people sometimes, you know, feel like they build this kind of what I called a paper, you know, almost like a, what they call it, a straw man, Sorrel, to be knocked down in arguments. And in fact, his argument's a bit more subtle than that.
Yeah, fair enough.
I just thought it would be worth looking at, thinking. As I said, he's exercised my imagination for a long time. When I first came across, you know, became interested in syndicalism, anarcho-syndicalism, you know, and I know as well that the anarchists have drawn upon Sorrel's work. You know, he's inspired a lot of people, he's still drawn upon, you know, rightly or wrongly. As I said, sometimes ideas take an idea, you know, a life of their own. As I said before, Marx denied he was a Marxist. He got so pissed off with people. I can sympathise with him, I really can. But I think this has been useful. It's handy to knock ideas about.
Thanks very much for that.
No, thanks for your response. You know, it's you know, as I said, I did it as, you know, as a part of a philosophy MA. I've had a penchant for philosophy since I was 19. Now I'm retired. I've had a chance to actually study it and look at things which have been bugging me for a long time.
Okay, I think Darren had his hand up, and then Joel's got his hand up. Darren, did you want to say something?
Yeah, just a quick question. So it's kind of curious. You mentioned his kind of virulent anti-Jacobinism. And could you just briefly go into that again? Because I'm curious because, you know, I may be misattributing views to Sorrel, but this idea of the vitality of the general strike and this moment in revolution, when I've heard other people speak in those terms, I'm not attributing this to Sorrel. There's a romanticism there. You know, it's not a philosophical position. It's just like you basically want the romantic moment, you know, of the revolution, the barricades. And I guess I was curious how you said he was sort of so against the Jacobinism in French, like, historical politics, because I see the Jacobins, rightly or wrongly, as they have this romantic tinge to them now. For some people, yeah. You know, one of the most popular left magazines in America right now is called Jacobin.
Yeah, I know of it.
So it's like it's kind of interesting how he wants this sort of, you know, this moment in revolution, and then he seems, on the one hand, he liked the Bolsheviks for acting. And then on the other hand, he has this issue with the Jacobins and his historical past because of how they acted. You know,
he's not so a consistent thinker, because, as I said, he actually flirted with the Action Française, which were a royalist party. Yeah, you know, he was a strange guy. As I said, he didn't go in a straight line; he meanders.
And could I ask just one other question? I'm curious about this. Is that because you obviously started your talk mentioning Arendt's book from the 60s.
Yes, it's called, you know, In Revolution. Yeah, I mean, thin book. It's more like a pamphlet rather than a book.
Okay, but in sort of like tackling sorrow or disagreeing with sorrow in the late 60s, and we're talking about a guy that had died 40 years previously, and as you say, he's somebody who's been claimed by various traditions.
Indeed.
Was she, by writing this book, did she kind of like bring him back into like public
that might be the law of unintended consequences kicking in there. Yes, I think possibly could be. Yes, I also mentioned Schlesinger as well.
I don't know Schlesinger, but
he was one of JFK's intellectuals. He's in the
that's Schlesinger. Okay,
yeah, Schlesinger, the same one. And I said some of the revolutions, student revolutions of the 1968. Invoked sorrow, as well as
it's almost like they were blaming like sorrow for inadvertently birthing these in the same way that people today on the right are blaming the Frankfurt School for cultural Marxism.
Cultural Marxism, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a convenient
upselling. She was claiming sorrow was
I'd actually read it. It's only a smaller book. It's still getting it in print.
Yeah? Okay.
It's a very short one. But she actually contradicts herself quite a bit in it. It is a polemic.
Okay, well.
As I said, it is a polemic. You know, and I've got some respect for Arendt. You know, she was quite she wrote a hell of a lot, and sometimes she contradicted herself as well. She changed her positions.
Okay, cheers. Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem at all. No problem.
Okay, Joel, you're back. Yeah, you're on.
Hi, Joel.
Joel, you want to unmute yourself, I think.
It's just to say, because I didn't know anything about George Sorel, I have found this Q&A really informative, so thank you very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed the feedback. Yeah, as I said, because when I wrote the bloody thing, it felt very lonely at times. Just me and a load of texts. You know, I was having these internal dialogues in my head.
Right.
You know, I felt like my head was being hijacked by different political positions. It was really strange at times.
But you can now put MA after your name, can you?
With other things as well.
Okay, Tim again.
Yeah, it was nothing to do with the discussion, although I have really enjoyed it as well. I was wondering if you had a couple of minutes at the end of the meeting, Joe, to have a little chat.
I don't mind. If you want to stick on this, you know, stick on Zoom and talk to us, that's fine.
Yeah, no worries at all. Cheers.
Yeah, I'll stay on here. Yeah,
there's supposed to be a meeting of the Northeast branches there. And,
that's what I was talking about.
That's correct.
Anybody's got anything to say about Sorrel? We've closed the formal part of the meeting, but Paddy, don't cut us all off because the Northeast people want to talk to each other. Okay, so next week there isn't a meeting because it's the eve of the delegate meeting, the October party meeting. So which will also be on Zoom. So we'll have plenty of time to talk on Zoom. Okay, so this will be the end of the formal meeting. And thank you, Joe, for your
thank you, all you comrades for the dialogue. It's been great. Enjoyed it. It's been grand.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
All the best.